This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre, Straight Fire. Thursday, September 16th. Got to start the pod with a shout out to my old man. Pops turns 80 today. Happy birthday, Dad. You're probably not listening to this, but make it a good one in sunny Florida. Actually, the sports world today has a ton of sports news happening, big and not always great news. We're going to get to USC, which we've glossed over on Monday before the Clay Helton firing. We'll do a little bit Dallas Cowboys in a sec, but oof, poor Cowboys. Bring on Adam Chernoff. You guys remember him from last year. P.S. He is in the $4 million contest, the one that I went 3-2 in. He went 5-0. So he will shed some insights on this week, what he's looking at, his process. You guys are going to love the interview. Some picks for the weekend, and then I'll wrap up with a best bet for tonight's Giants-Washington battle of awful quarterbacks. It should be a slop fest. But I have to start with the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, goodness gracious, can they get any more unlucky? The defense is a joke, can't stop anybody, and they now lose their best defender, DeMarcus Lawrence, out 6 to 8 weeks. Holy hell, have you looked at who they're going to throw at the Chargers, who, by the way, have an incredible offensive line now after they stole the Packers center and traded up to draft the kid from Northwestern. The Dallas Cowboys, with DeMarcus Lawrence on the shelf, with Randy Gregory likely out this week, they're going to start a former Jet, Terrell Basham, at one end. The other end, perhaps somebody named Dorrance Armstrong. Never heard of him. First time I've ever seen his name in my life. 2018 fourth-round pick out of Kansas. And on the inside, they're beat up there, too. Carlos Watkins and a kid from UCLA who I'm not going to try to pronounce. Folks, this is a gruesome front four. And we already know that Dan Quinn's defense is not good in the opener. Tampa Bay mowed up and down the field against them. They made the mistake in the offseason of drafting a linebacker, picking up Keanu Neal, who was a safety, and they said they're going to play him at linebacker. I'm just telling, this Dallas defense is a mess. All that being said, they're going to still win the division. Sorry to my Washington football team fans. Yes, the Eagles look scary. Washington will be okay with the defense, but they're already down to their backup quarterback, Taylor Heinicke, who at least is going to play for 6 weeks. And then you got the Giants who play tonight, and oh my goodness, are they in trouble. The division's that bad, and I think Dak's offense is that impressive. Even without Michael Gallup, yes, he is on the shelf. Even without Lyle Collins, who is suspended. I know it doesn't look good for the Cowboys, but I'm just telling you, as long as Dak is healthy, Dallas is still winning that division. They have the most talent on offense. Offense matters more than defense, and as long as Dak is standing upright, I expect the Cowboys to win this division. I don't know if it's with 8 wins, with 9, maybe 10. Obviously, it would not be ideal to start the season down 0-2. Heading into week 3, a big one against Philly on Monday Night Football. Then it loosens up a little bit. Carolina, New York Giants, Patriots are tough, then the bye week. If they can get to the bye week 3-3, that would be a huge win. I don't know about the Chargers game. By the way, just got an invite to check out SoFi for Chargers Cowboys. Don't know if I'm going yet. I kind of would like to. I haven't been to a game at SoFi, although I did do a walkthrough of the stadium when it was getting built. Looks amazing. Chargers Cowboys is all of a sudden just such a huge game. I mean, every game feels huge. We talked about this yesterday. Like, there's only 17 games. You don't want to fall in an 0-2 hole. Dallas, if they fall 0-2 and Philly somehow beats San Fran, Dallas is now 2 games back of the Eagles, and they play the Eagles in week 3. And you lose that, you know, overcoming a 3-game deficit to win the division, good luck with that. Dallas Cowboys, they're up against it. Quickly on college football. It's so funny. We talked about Clay Helton and USC on Monday's pod. Like 5 hours after the pod dropped, they fired Clay Helton. And if you go back and listen, the name I had heard was Byron Leftwich. Since then, a bunch of names have been floated. Everybody wants to talk. Urban Meyer. Oh, we can get Urban Meyer. He's going to come out here. Let's just remember, Urban Meyer was coming out to Fox for, was doing the studio shows last year. Okay. I'm not getting into the business of how he liked it. Did he like LA? Would he move here? All that. All I can say is unequivocally, it's not happening. He's not coming out here to USC. You guys can dream about it. Pie in the sky. They can sell him hard. It would be Buster Douglas over Mike Tyson if Urban Meyer came to USC. That's how much of a long shot we're talking about. This guy's old. You think he wants to move across the country with his family at this stage in his career? It's just not happening. He's a small town guy. He's not an I would say 0.0% chance. Obviously, you want to say never say never. Maybe they throw all the money in the world at him. But I would say unequivocally, it's not happening. They need to set their sights on more realistic names. Now, the name that keeps coming up is Luke Fickell, who's at Cincinnati. And by the way, Cincinnati is going to be one of my best bets for college football this weekend. The problem with Luke Fickell, anybody you talk to, like, he's in that Ohio State mindset where he wants to control everything. And folks, USC is one of these weird programs where the boosters have a lot of say. A lot. And I shouldn't say weird because that's how it goes at a lot of places. But the USC boosters have a ton of say. And this whole, like, oh, we can bring back the Pete Carroll era, like, that was an era that's just not happening again. Have you seen what's happened since then? Lane Kiffin experiment totally blew up in their face. Then they passed on Orgeron, who ended up winning a title, but that's understandable. And they land on Sark. He has his personal demons. Then I don't really know how they fell into Clay Helton. He salvaged the season when Sark left and got kind of like a, hey, let's have Clay Helton just stay on. He's a good guy, and the boosters can kind of run the show behind the scenes. And Clay went 10-3, 11-3 with Sark's guys. And then what happens? 2018, disaster. 2019, disaster. 2020, it was good, but come on, it was a COVID-shortened season. And now you lose to Stanford when you're favored by a million. That was an ugly loss. I just think the more realistic names are guys along the lines of a Byron Leftwich, a player coach who's a young guy who's worked with Tom Brady, won a Super Bowl. Again, he's not a USC guy, but sometimes this idea of, oh, we need to keep it in the family. We got to get a USC guy. Like that, remember, the Lakers tried that. Like, that doesn't always work. Running your business like a mom and pop shop doesn't always work. Just keep it in the family. Like, sometimes it's best to just go outside the family. Find somebody who really, really will be a good fit at USC. Some of the other names that are out there are legitimately comical. Urban Meyer was so perturbed, he actually opened a press conference on Wednesday with, no, I'm not going there. There's no chance. No shot. It's just not happening. People need to stop talking about that. Now, James Franklin of Penn State is a super popular name. Another guy who's kind of a control freak. But listen, a lot of these coaches are. Franklin's done some great things at Penn State. I think he's attainable. Could they get Tom Herman? Sure. Will they want Tom Herman after what happened in Texas? Probably not. Gus Malzahn, another guy, like, won in the SEC, fell apart quickly. They booted him. Like, I mean, it's a tough spot. It's going to make it even tougher with UCLA ascending, okay? With Oregon taking down Ohio State and Mario Cristobal. He's that guy. Why would he come to USC? Why would Cristobal leave what he's building at Oregon and come to USC? Like, in Oregon, Mario Cristobal is the guy right now. You come to L.A., where are the USC Trojans? Like, I don't know, it's Lakers, the Rams were in the Super Bowl, and they're one of the favorites to get there. The Chargers and Justin Herbert are on the rise. The Clippers will be okay when Kawhi comes back. Like, you're falling way behind at USC. Maybe you could build it up to Pete Carroll levels, but remember, there weren't, at least I don't think there were, two football teams in L.A. when Pete Carroll was dominating. So Chargers were in San Diego, and L.A. was in St. Louis. Now there's just a lot of competition on the weekends in the fall. And frankly, USC people just need to get a grip, okay? There is no chance, is what Urban Meyer said. I think that's a safe bet. Now, is he struggling at Jacksonville? Yeah, but it's been like 8 minutes. Can we give the guy a break? Why are we in such a rush to fire people? Don't we let things breathe? Let it hang around? Remember the great story about Seinfeld was so low-rated and struggled? Imagine if they dumped Seinfeld early on in the first season. Like, it's gone down as one of the great shows in TV history. You got to give these things a chance. Give these coaches at least a cycle. All right, let's get to our interview. The great gambling NFL savant, Adam Chernoff, from The Simple Handicap.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire a guy who came on last year. You guys loved his stuff. He has a great story of how he got into gambling and sports, and he lives in Canada, but he's starting to blow up here in America. Maybe that's accurate. Maybe he's already blown up. Adam Chernoff. Adam, how are you?
You say Canada like it's so far away and foreign.
Well, outside Calgary. I mean, gee, goodness, great. What is it? Is it already like 3 feet of snow on the ground there or no?
In the mountains, we have snow, but here it's still decent during the day, but mornings and evenings, the old bones in my body are starting to feel the chill. So it's getting worse every year.
So Adam has a great podcast, The Simple Handicap. Now he's taken it to Covers, one of the bigger gambling shops online. Adam, do you feel like talking about that process? Because a lot of people want to start a pod. They don't know how to make that next step from mom and pop shop to I'm going to join a big dog. Was that fun or difficult? Or, I mean, I know there's a lot of people clamoring for your services now.
Just do something that you enjoy doing every single day and just keep publishing it. Don't look at the views. Don't look at any of the reaction to it from the number side. Just keep doing it and doing it, responding to people that listen to the show, building out a fan base. And the way I look at it, if you start with 20 people on a podcast, because you really want to get into podcasting, the way I sort of pictured it, because I was there, and it's like if 20 people showed up in your backyard at 8 a.m. and were willing to listen to anything you had to say for 10 minutes, like that would be a pretty significant thing. And then it goes from 20 to 100 to 1,000 to 5,000. Like it grows quickly and you keep that same sort of thought in your head. And when you look at it from that perspective and you consider how many people that actually is, if you picture them in your yard, like it's significant. So just keep doing it, keep creating. And if you're good enough, then you'll end up where you need to be.
Yeah, I like to bring on guys who think differently. You enjoyed Preston Johnson. TA was on last week. And Adam is definitely in that boat of, oh, man. Like, I like to listen to people who are going to say stuff, Adam, that I had not considered or thought of. You know, that's where the value is. You're adding value. And your week one numbers were pretty amazing from a gambling standpoint. Although, you were with me, I believe, on the Patriots, right?
Last week, I was not on the Patriots.
Oh.
This week, though, different story. We'll definitely be on the Patriots.
But you're on it. You're a Jets fan. Like, I don't know. Are you in the $4 million contest or are you not doing, you're just talking about it?
I'm in the Circa Millions. And okay. Last week, it was a 5-0 week for me last week. I don't like boasting or records or anything.
Wow.
So it's that you get excited because you're like, maybe this is a quarterly prize, but you got to go 18-2 or 19-1.
The quarterly prize is, I think, 200K, right?
150 the first, and then there's second, third, yeah. Fourth.
Somebody sent me a DM on Instagram that there was 196 people 5-0. I did not know Adam was one of them. But congratulations. I went 3-2. Stupid picks on the Ravens and Patriots. Although the Patriots were inside the 10 and fumbled it away, I really had liked the Patriots side. But anyways, let's move on to week two, Adam. First of all, like when I listen to your pod, you're betting early in the week. Like you're laying money down Sunday night, Monday before the market moves. Maybe you're influencing the market.
I know people don't like a lot of people listening to the show, but like, and I hate talking about numbers that were already taken, but in terms of like the look, everyone that was on listening to the show, including myself, we're very high on taking the Broncos on the look ahead, which was very early. That's obviously moved a ton. But when you're betting a game on a look ahead line or really late Sunday night or early Monday morning, it's not taking a ton of money to move a number, half a point, a point, point and a half, whatever it might be, especially on like totals. So it's the most advantageous time to bet because you can get ahead of numbers. But in reality, if you have a show with a lot of people listening to it and people value information and you send something out that early, if just a handful of people respond to it collectively, yeah, it's going to move a number just a little bit. Later in the week, that doesn't happen because the markets are just far too efficient and the limits are way too high. Books know when they are. But if you're sending out look aheads or really early on Sunday, right as the openers come out, you can definitely get ahead of some pretty big moves for sure.
So let's look at the Broncos Jags. Jaguars look terrible losing to a team that people thought could go 0-17. And now they go home and host Teddy Covers. Everybody knows the numbers. Teddy Bridgewater is 97-0 against the spread on the road. And it's incredible what he's done. But Adam, we're talking about a 6-point favorite now on the road in Jacksonville, back-to-back road games. I'm still trying to research. I know the 49ers have 2 straight road games. They stayed east. They've done that the last 2 years. I have not been able to find yet if the Broncos traveled back and are coming back for Jacksonville or they stayed out east. But at 6, like, you would not tell people, hey, man, you got to back Teddy. It's get favored by 6 on the road, right?
Yeah, it's at this point, the numbers obviously bet into place. The one thing I'll say about Bridgewater last week was we know him as this conservative, keep the ball close to the line of scrimmage, don't make mistakes, make the right play and the safe play when it needs to happen. Last week against the Giants, he had an intended air yards, which shows how deep the quarterbacks are throwing the football downfield, if it's caught or not. So basically a little bit more advanced in the depth of target, but he was at 8.4 yards per attempt on his attended air yards, which is a gigantic number for Bridgewater, but a number that was bigger than guys like Brady and Prescott and Rodgers, who was playing from behind for the majority of the game. Like, we just haven't seen that from Bridgewater. And so he loses Jerry Jeudy for a while now, but still, that was a very different looking Teddy Bridgewater that we saw. And it was very interesting to see a guy who's loved anywhere he goes in the league, but the guys on both the defense and the offense, the veterans within that team, some of the post-game stuff, like, they absolutely love the guy and rally around him. So very big change for the Broncos moving on from Locke to Bridgewater. And if that deep ball's real, then against this Jags defense, 6 is in play for a quarterback that usually anytime you see this number, especially on the road, as good as he has been, just seems too large. So it's not out of the usual Bridgewater range, but it's a big number to be laying on the road as bad as the Jets.
So they were great in between the 20s, but in the red zone, only 2 for 5. And it was weird. Cortland Sutton does not look like 100%. And now with Jeudy out, you know, I don't know. It just feels like a big price to pay. What about silly stuff like, hey man, it's going to be super hot in Jacksonville. Jacksonville should be able to run the football against Denver. I know the Giants really couldn't, but Saquon Barkley, give me a break. I don't know. I almost wonder, do you consider the Jags in the contest if they're at 6, 6.5?
I'm not betting the Jags here. If it gets to 7, that changes it. But at 6, I can't do it. Like, Meyer just looked so unprepared for the pro level. It was, nobody really expected him to look that bad. And the offensive line looked bad in preseason. And you sort of look at that and you wonder how much of that's going to translate into the regular season. It looked just as bad against the Houston Texans in week 1. So I'm not running the bet the Jags at anything. Mm. If it gets to 7, yeah, it starts to look different because of the value of 7. But still, it's just so hard to bet Jacksonville right now based on how they look.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
The other line that kind of seemed to take off was Seattle and Tennessee. Tennessee, of course, got just eviscerated by Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. And Russell Wilson, despite the new offensive coordinator, they came out and just crushed the Colts. I mean, that felt like the easiest win of the weekend for me, Seattle just rolling. I don't know, though. Tennessee at 6? Feels like a good number. I mean, again, this is not a Seattle defense that came in touted whatsoever. And you got to think Tennessee has bounced back in them, right? Unless you're totally off on this new OC.
With this group of players for the Titans, Tannehill, Henry, the whole crew, this is the biggest number that an opponent has laid against them that isn't the Kansas City Chiefs. And that was a 7.5-point spread in Kansas City in the playoffs. So this, for the Titans with this group of players, is uncharted territory in terms of a point spread being laid against them. So this is a number that's going to move back. It opened 3.5. It got to 6. It is not going to close at 6. It is going to go back the other way. And a lot of that's fueled by, like you just mentioned, it was week 1. Everybody overreacts to week 1. The Seahawks look terrific, really dominated the game start to finish against the Colts. And then the Titans had that's as bad as we've seen the Titans play with this group of players and under Mike Vrabel. You don't see that from them to that level. And so you get the contrasting results there. It's the natural overreaction, but now at six, from a price perspective, it's just way too large. And this Seahawks defense, it is not good. Don't let anything fool you. This is a very bad unit in coverage. Jamal Adams makes headlines. He's terrible in coverage. He's a phenomenal blitzer. You get him near the line of scrimmage, it's dangerous. But this number, way too big. So Tennessee at six is definitely a bet worth making.
You said overreaction. I mean, and there are a lot of them out there. The Tampa Bay, Atlanta line. Like, how do you not overreact as you personally, Adam, like when you evaluate some of these teams? Like, yeah, Seattle looked really good, but I don't know, maybe the Colts just aren't very good this year. Maybe they're a below 500 team. And then you see the Seahawks-Colts line and you're like, I'm sorry, Rams-Colts this week. And you're like, why aren't the Rams favored by more? I don't know. It's really difficult to not overreact initially, at least. Now, we're still early in the week. You know, by Saturday, I think that'll have worn off. But I don't know, man. Can you talk me out of betting on, say, the Rams on the road against the Colts? Because I know a lot of people are going to take the Colts. But the way they struggle defensively against that fast Seattle offense, the Rams have just as fast of an offense.
Well, so I'll put it to you this way. Were you higher on the Rams or the Seahawks coming into the season?
I had the Seahawks below the Rams.
Okay. So was it by a significant margin?
I mean, I consider essentially the Rams the second best team in the NFC coming in ahead of the Packers.
Okay. So if we're looking at this price, the Seahawks were a very expensive 2.5 or 3 flat minus 110 against the Indianapolis Colts in Indy. Now the Rams are a 4-point favorite against the Colts in Indy. So it's the same venue, but we see a different price here with a lower total. So anytime that the total is lower, the Seahawks and Colts were at 50. This is at 47. The point spread becomes a little bit more valuable per point. So when it comes to looking at this, the Rams at -4 compared to the Seahawks at -3, it reads like 1 point, but the value of 3 in the NFL is more important than any other number. So even though it's just 1 point higher, it's a very important 1 point higher with a slightly lower total. So we're really seeing, if you think the Rams were better than the Seahawks coming into the season, based off week 1, maybe you think a little bit higher about Seattle in general, but we're seeing a Rams line here at -4 with a shorter total against the same opponent, really reflecting what you just said, what the win total markets that were up for 5 months reflected. It's really just a price that comes from that preseason market and how we sort of all thought about these teams coming into the season. So it's not a significant difference. And I don't think it's too high or too low. I think as we're seeing now, as this number stayed steady much of the week, it's just a price that we're sort of expected to see with the shorter total. So that's how we get to this number right now. It's not a huge difference one way or the other.
What about the Rams covering on Sunday Night Football, one of the games that everybody watches? The public's all over the Rams. I'm assuming the public's probably going to come in on the Rams again here at, I don't know, 80% or anything like that. I mean, maybe that doesn't matter to you.
Not necessarily, because what the public lines up on one side or the other is not ultimately going to dictate how much a number moves one way or the other necessarily. It's going to have a slight impact, but if it disagrees with the numbers that I have, it's not something I'm looking one way or the other. If I could say anything about what I saw Sunday night was this Rams defensive front, which is lauded and this number one defense from a season ago and all of that nonsense, because they benefited from such an easy schedule, but the Chicago ran at will against the Rams defensive front. They have 5.2 yards per rush. They didn't have a drive, the Chicago Bears, that ended on their side of midfield the entire game. So the Rams were giving Andy Dalton and this very weak Bears offense a lot of opportunity to move the football. The Bears didn't ultimately do anything with it, but I had huge concerns about the Rams and their defense coming into the season, just because of how they looked last year against a very easy schedule that benefited them a ton. Not necessarily going to be backing one side or the other in this game, but I think the number's fair.
What about the Bengals game? It looks like, as we're recording this here on Wednesday, the Bengals have crossed through three, and now there's, I guess, just a, I'm assuming that's professional money on Cincinnati. Maybe there was a release that you like to talk about on your pod. But this was, I believe it opened at four Bengals at Bears, and now it's down to two. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, it's been a ton of professional money, multiple releases. And when we say the word release, it's either a group that is moving on a side that bets it themselves, and then word gets out and other people follow, or places that operate as a service where they have a number of followers who bet at many different sports books and they collectively bet a game at the same time. It becomes public and people follow on. And so we've seen a case of both sides here where it's professional money. There has been a release on the Bengals. And when you see a line move from a four down all the way to a one for a road team, that's a significant jump.
We're talking about Zach Taylor, Adam.
But it's beyond Zach Taylor. Like it's Joe Burrow. It's that offense. And there's belief that like they can put together a pretty decent team and a pretty decent season. And you think about that game against the Vikings, how you get to the final score is to me more important than what the final score was. And it was a game where the Bengals got out to a lead very early, held control of the game. Vikings come back late, but I was much more impressed with the Bengals than I was the Vikings in that game. And so you take that away, you get the Bengals winning. You have the Bears losing on Sunday Night Football. As productive as they might have been on offense, still, it was a lot of people watching the Bears lose, a lot of people watching the Bengals win. It's the week two. It's overreaction. And here we are with a pretty significant move supported by professional money on the Bengals.
Yeah, I think what makes me nervous about the Bears, if you remember, they ran the kickback like 75 yards and they're about to score. And then Dalton, you know, tip pass, intercepted in the end zone. If that's a touchdown for the Bears, that game changes dramatically. You know, remember the Bears were still in it, I believe, into the third quarter, right?
Yeah, and they were. And then there was a couple big touchdowns and the cup reception, and it flipped it. But like the Bears, despite what the scoreboard says, were moving the football against that Rams defense that sort of gets disregarded. And the Rams defense is, as many concerns as I have with it, much better than his Cincinnati Bengals defense. So we'll see what happens with this number, but certainly difficult to oppose that much professional money coming in on the Bengals.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I guess we could wrap up with this, you know, this Thursday Night Football. Like, there are fans back in the stadiums. That was not the case last year. And I don't know how much of a home field advantage there is here on a Thursday night game. Usually these are sloppy. And now you got a divisional matchup, Washington Giants. I kind of want to take just a little action play on Danny Dimes. I don't know. Watching them against the Broncos, though, it's just a tough team to back.
Yeah, but like that Broncos defense and that secondary specifically is terrific. Washington, their defense, nothing to sneeze about either, but they were, again, similar to the Rams, a team I think we think highly of because of their defense, but it was a team that benefited from a very easy schedule last season. So we saw what they looked like against the Chargers, letting that team walk all around the field. Big step back to the Giants, but this is a game that'll get to a flat field goal. We've seen this number move just a little bit. It was 4. It's now 3.5. A division game with such a short total, it's just a spot that'll naturally close at 3. Downgrade for the quarterback situation in Washington. We've seen that reflected a little bit within the market, but that's going to continue. I wouldn't be running to bet Washington in this spot, but I'd probably lean to your side with the Giants, but it's a game I haven't bet one way or the other, but a number I think we see come down just a little bit more.
I only briefly mentioned COVID. I remember last year when you came on, there was kind of a wait and see. Firing early in the week could be risky given COVID. And we saw the Saints, I think they had like 6 or 7 or 8 coaches who are vaccinated, but have to be in COVID protocol. So for instance, they won't be at practice this week. I guess they'll have to Zoom in and then jump in late in the week. Is that impacting any of how you look at things so far this season?
Honestly, last season, aside from the Broncos Saints game, which I got lucky on, I never really had a spot where any of the COVID news impacted any of the bets I made. Maybe that was me getting lucky. I don't know, but I didn't really get too far into it last season. And this year, very little effort on my side to try sort of look into that or determine it. If it gets to key players, then obviously it'll matter, but it's now, it seems like the protocol is different for every single team at this. Mm-hmm. I can't keep up with it and I'm focused elsewhere.
I'll leave you with one bet that I had made earlier this, as soon as the Raiders won that lucky game on Monday night, I knew I was going to be on the Steelers. Gruden flying east, hates travel. Huge high profile win on Monday night. Even though the Steelers are coming off the win over the Bills, it just screams like a bad matchup. I don't know if you've seen some of the Raiders injuries, but like in the contest, I think that's probably, unless it's, I see a seven, probably going to be my number one pick, the Steelers. Do you have any thoughts on Pittsburgh and Vegas?
The tricky part is trying to determine how much of this stuff is already priced into the line. And so from the look ahead side, this was Steelers at six. After the Raiders won and it reopened Tuesday morning, it was at 5.5. It's still there. But like you mentioned, it's the Raiders off a huge win in the stadium with fans for the first time in overtime, flying east for an early start. Gruden doesn't like flying. You're going from an indoor team to an outdoor team in Heinz Field, a significant step up in class of opposing defense. Like, there's so many different situations here historically that work against the Raiders. But a lot of them are just so widely talked about that you wonder, how much is this factored into the price? The Steelers last week were 6-point underdogs against the Bills. They're now 6-point favorites against the Raiders. Is the gap between the Raiders and the Bills 10 to 12 points?
Asked me that before week one, 10 might have been a little stretch, but it probably would have been close to 7, right? The Bills weren't they your number 2 or 3 power rated team?
They are, so that's kind of what I'm getting at here is, so like if it's 7 or 8, right, which sounds reasonable, we're now at an adjustment. If we're looking for between where they were last week and this week, it's at a 10. We're just talking about how bad the situation is. Is this number actually inflated because of the situation, making that gap between the teams look bigger, already accounting for that with all of that information priced in? Or are we as bettors undervaluing all of that situation and showing that there might be value here with the Steelers? But it's always tough to tell with these in a game where there's so many of these narrative and these situation-based things that are sort of right around the game and very widely discussed. Like, how much of that is priced in and how much isn't? Because it's not like the bookmakers and people with influence within the betting market don't know about these situations.
Right. Too. Yeah, I mean, everybody has basically the same information, right? But I see something, and again, I'm sure this is baked in, but Adam, you saw the Bills. I think they had 6 holding penalties on the offensive line struggling to block Pittsburgh. The Raiders' offensive line just got annihilated by the Ravens on the blitz, and they had, I believe, 2 guys injured coming out of it. We don't know if Incognito's coming back this week. Doesn't that feel like such a mismatch in the trenches? And I know that they know that in Vegas, but they're not moving the line at all, are they not?
It's a huge mismatch, but again, it's the Steelers laying 6 points. Like, that's
a favorite. Yeah.
That's a big, that looks a lot different than going into Buffalo as a 6-point dog. Like, it's a huge shift for sure.
Yeah. All right. Adam Chernoff, you got to listen to his podcast every day, every morning. It's really good. The Simple Handicap. And then where else can they find your stuff, Adam?
Just on the Simple Handicap, Apple, Spotify, and then on Twitter at Adam Chernoff.
Yeah, he's good. He's Canadian. Listen, enjoy the winter up there, Adam. I'm sure I'll badger you over text for. By the way, do you do any college football betting at all, or no? Just NFL.
No, it's so tough to follow it just with everything I have going on. But then also being a country removed, like you said, Canada so far away that there is truth to that. And the TV coverage for college is not nearly as good. So, not a college football guy myself.
Yeah. All right, dude. Have a good one.
Thanks very much. Talk to you soon. Yep.
The only thing better than sitting on your couch watching the game is making money while you do it. Here's your best bet.
Great stuff from Chernoff. Really like his work. He's a sharp guy. He's worked on both sides of the counter. You always got to love that. And now it's time for the best bet. I can't talk myself out of the Giants here. If you can get a 3.5, I think you got to take it, right? Washington has no home field advantage. That stadium is always empty or quiet. It's just that there's no disadvantage for the Giants traveling right down 95. You know, it's a must win, obviously, for both teams. But I have a funny stat. So Fox, because we do a lot of gambling content, they have researchers dig up some numbers. This is mind-blowing. Danny Dimes is a pretty bad quarterback, we can all agree. Turnover machine. However, according to Fox Research, in four career starts against Washington, somehow, Danny Dimes is 4-0, completing 68% of his passes, 8 TDs, 3 interceptions. So 4-0 against Washington in his career. In 23 other starts against everyone else in the league, he's 4-19. A turnover machine. He for whatever, maybe he gets Washington's defense. I don't know. I kind of like the Giants here. Getting 3.5 in a divisional matchup when the total's 40.5. You heard Chernoff talk about that. Low total. It's going to be a close game. Feels like a field goal game either way. I will have a personal rooting interest in Terry McLaurin, obviously, for fantasy purposes. Not a great spot for McLaurin playing with Taylor Heinicke. And I joked that Taylor Heinicke reminded me of Matt Saracen, a.k.a. QB1 from Friday Night Lights. Taylor Heinicke in that playoff game basically would drop back. He's like small, so he was struggling in the pocket, and he would just dart around and like make some kind of crazy plays, and they would happen, and it was interesting. You know, can Taylor Heinicke get it done against a Giants defense that's kind of good, but got shredded by Teddy Bridgewater? I have no faith whatsoever in Heinicke. I'm taking the Giants, getting 3.5. All right, guys, we'll be back tomorrow. NFL picks and college football. Big, big weekend in sports. You'll love to see it. We'll talk to you then.